Welcome to the Alpha One edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the Alpha One antitrypsin deficiency community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, special correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're at the World Orphan Drug Congress taking place at National Harbor, Maryland. Our guest today is Denise Scots-Knight, CEO of Mereo Biopharma, a London-based NASDAQ-listed biotech focused on rare diseases. Denise has a PhD in biochemistry and was a Fulbright Scholar at the University of California, Berkeley. Thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Larry.
Let's go right into it. What is alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency and why is it an important and significant rare disease?
So alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency is a genetic disease. There are different genotypes. We're focused on the ZZ genotypes, which are the more severe form of the disease. The way it manifests itself is either a misfolded alpha-1 antitrypsin or a lack of alpha-1 antitrypsin. The role of alpha-1 antitrypsin is primarily to keep neutrophil elastase in check. And when you have either this misfolded alpha-1 antitrypsin or a lack of alpha-1 antitrypsin, neutrophil elastase in the lung goes unchecked. And that can result in a deterioration of the lung function over a period of many, many years. These patients can have COPD symptoms when they're very young. Gradually, their lung function may deteriorate sufficiently that they need a lung transplant.
Alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency is itself a rare disease. You're focused on one subtype of this rare disease. How prevalent is this subtype?
So the overall prevalence of alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency is 100,000. And the population that we're focused on, the ZZs, represent about 85% of this total population.
And 100,000 worldwide in the United States?
So that's US and Europe.
US and Europe. Okay. Just a question, if I may. Your drug, alvelestat, does not address the liver problems that are caused by this disease, correct? It's only looking at the lung issues.
Right. That's absolutely right. The liver... The number of patients with a liver disease is actually around 25% of the total population. So it's actually a much lower patient number.
Untreated, alpha-1 can result in death rather quickly, correct?
Untreated alpha-1 can result in sufficient lung damage that these patients need a lung transplant. The success rate of lung transplants is very low. And of course, the appropriate lung transplant may not be available. So that can lead to mortality.
You mentioned 100,000 to 120,000 patients in the US and Europe, correct? What about undiagnosed patients?
Yeah, so actually, if we look at in Europe, for example, probably only 10 to 15,000 patients are actually diagnosed.
Why is that? Why the disparity between Europe and the United States?
Well, it's this, in the US, the diagnosis, it's also underdiagnosed. So that's both in Europe and the US.
Why is that?
So the disease manifests itself early on as COPD. And so these patients typically sent away with classic COPD medication, their bronchodilators, for example.
Which helps
them breathe a little better initially, but
it doesn't address the disease.
Right. The diagnosis rate is improving, or at least, you know, individuals are finding out they're carriers because of all the genetic testing that's going on. We believe the diagnosis rate will significantly increase once there are other therapies available.
And at present, how many therapies are available for this disease?
So there's one therapy that's available for the disease at the moment, that's augmentation, which is basically replacing alpha-1 antitrypsin using a plasma-derived product. And it's IV. The current product is IV once a week.
Although certain companies, including one in Israel, is working on an inhaled product.
So there are companies working on inhaled AAT, and also there's a recombinant AAT that's being developed.
Okay, so what's the clinical status of alvelestat at the moment?
So we finished our phase two last year, mid last year, successfully. I have to say, we We statistically significantly met all three of the primary endpoints. We've had an end of phase two meeting with both the FDA and the EMA. And based on all the regulatory feedback, we're now putting in place all the activities that we need to do for the program to be phase three ready.
And your announcement at the American Thoracic Society's recent conference here in Washington was just that, presenting the results of this end of phase two, correct?
That's correct. We present it, the trial was called the ASTRAEUS trial. We enrolled almost 100 patients in that trial. We believe it's one of the largest phase twos that's been conducted in alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency. And as I say, it met all of the primary endpoints, the biomarker primary endpoints, and the data were presented by Professor Stockley, who was the principal investigator at AATS.
And what is the role of patient advocacy groups such as the Alpha-1 Foundation in Miami?
So the Alpha-1, we have a good working relationship with the Alpha-1 Foundation in Miami. We're very appreciative of the help they've given us to enroll our study, and also a lot of background information on, you know, the patient journey for these individuals.
So you're seeking not only to get a drug like this approved in the United States, but before the EMA as well for the European market.
Yes, and what we did was, which I realize for some companies quite unusual, we did our end of phase two meetings in parallel. So we did both the EMA and the FDA in parallel. And what's really interesting, they have different approaches. So the FDA has been, you know, very concerned about how a patient feels and functions, and that's what they've been focused on. And as a result, at our end of phase two meeting, they guided for a PRO endpoint. The EMA, on the other hand, is very concerned about hard objective endpoints. And they have guided us to lung density by CT scan as the primary endpoint. So we have two different primary endpoints.
Rather than patient-reported outcomes.
They are interested in patient-reported outcomes. The FDA is also interested in lung density by CT scan, but those will be secondaries in the other territories.
So as far as you know, is the incidence of alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency increasing worldwide, or is it just because of better diagnosis?
So we believe that better diagnosis will lead to an increase. And in fact, the WHO and the GOLD guidelines call for all COPD patients now to be tested, but it's not really being applied. And again, we believe once there are new therapies available, remember, no new therapies have been developed for alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency for decades. So we believe once there are new therapies available, that diagnosis rate will really increase significantly, and hopefully these WHO and GOLD guidelines will be implemented.
And just another question, we're only coming now out of the pandemic. How did COVID affect the drug development for Alpha-1?
It was really, really challenging. So we were enrolling our phase two study. We originally intended to enroll 165 patients in this study. And we'd powered the study for 165 patients with two doses versus placebo. And it was super challenging. These patients, imagine, you know, it's COVID, it's a lung disease. Why would you want to enroll in a trial that means you have to go, you know, and be monitored, you go to the hospital, etc.? Super challenging. So what we did was we kept evaluating along the way, you know, how many patients have we enrolled? When could we stop the study? When would we have enough power to hit the endpoints in the study? And we also, once we knew that the high dose that we tested was safe, we biased the enrollment towards that high dose and placebo and fewer patients on the low dose. And so with that, we were able to stop the study when we'd enrolled 99 patients. But it was super challenging. And, you know, we're very, very appreciative of the patients who did enroll in the study.
And all 99 patients completed the study?
Not all 99 patients completed the study. We did have dropouts due to COVID. And also the other thing that is great about alvelestat, of course, it's neural. So that did, you know, had it been an IV that they have to go to the hospital one every week, that would have, I mean, I think that would have made the study impossible during COVID.
Right.
So we did benefit from the fact that it's an oral therapy.
So looking ahead, and we have to wrap it up, we're almost out of time. What's the timetable for getting this approved and on the market?
So we're looking, so we're in a process to partner this program. We're looking at a whole range of options for partnering the program to fund the phase three. So we're hoping, you know, that the phase three will get going next year. We're doing all the investment in manufacturing, what we need to do on the regulatory side to enable that to happen. And then, you know, there's an enrollment period and there's the data. The study length itself is 12 to 18 months. And we're looking at just over 200 patients.
And what's the cost of a study of this type?
So we estimate it's around 200,000 per patient. So 200 patients for a year and a half. So you're looking at, you know, something between $50 and $70 million.
Good luck. We hope it works out for you. Thank you very much, Denise, for talking with us today. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.